Dig that massive fade. Welcome to Media Geek. This is our your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reese Winnell, and I'm your host. On today's program, we're going to look under the hood some more of this proposed merger between XM and Sirius Satellite Radio and see what lies underneath and see what NAB's skullduggery is underway to try and derail it. With me in the studio, if he's caught his breath yet, is John Anderson of DIYmedia.net. Thanks, John, for joining me.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Former producer of Media Minutes, but Media Minutes lives.
Yes, Media Minutes lives on. July 20th was the first edition.
Today.
That's today.
At least today as we go to air in Champaign-Urbana.
Right. July 20th. I was trying to keep it date neutral.
I see.
July 20th is the first episode of the new crew of Media Minutes, which has taken over. That crew includes Stevie Converse and Candace Clement, both of which have experience in community radio and both of which are very involved with Free Press's ongoing press and outreach efforts. So they're perfect candidates to take over the show. And it's going to take them a little while, I think, to find their stride, but it definitely has promise. So keep checking freepress.net/Media Minutes.
And Media Minutes explores news at the intersection of media and democracy. So I'm glad someone is filling in with white gloves.
There is actually somebody at the intersection with white gloves waving and making the stop sign. It's very nice.
And you are a free man now to pursue teaching this semester.
I'm teaching. I'm going to be teaching Comm 101. Two sections, brand new, fresh out of high school kids. I'm going to try to get them to think about media a little bit differently than what they may be used to. It's going to be a challenge, but also, I think, an opportunity.
Are you going to be able to work any pirate radio in there?
Pirate radio, like...
Anything about pirate radio? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I got a whole lecture on pirate radio. Okay, a whole day is scheduled for that kind of stuff. Yeah.
All right. So if you want to learn about pirate radio, sign up for John Anderson's Comm 101
sections M and P
here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
They meet at good days and good times. You don't have to get out of bed too early. It'll be fun.
It's good for you. But down to serious business here.
Yes, no pun intended.
Yeah. Well, yes. Oh, wow. Yeah, this is I can see where the show's going already.
Right.
We're going to talk a little bit about this proposed merger between XM Satellite Radio and Sirius Satellite Radio. Two services, when they were created, promised the FCC they would never try to merge.
Yes.
And now we're about 7 or 8 years after it was initially licensed.
Yeah, roughly.
Roughly. And they're saying, I'm sorry, our business models aren't quite working out. We got to merge if we're going to make money.
Right. And that's pretty much where the action stands right now. First, they have to convince the FCC to actually change the statutory regulations governing satellite radio to allow for a single provider, or as I kind of like to think of it, a natural monopoly like we used to have in the telephone system. Because if you do think about satellite radio, it does kind of resemble a natural monopoly. You need to make a huge amount of capital investment up front in the technological infrastructure to distribute your signal before you can actually make any money. And these satellites cost $100 million a piece. XM and Sirius have 2, 3, 4 a piece. They're going to launch more. Constructing satellites and actually launching them is not a cheap business. They are so far in the hole that the amount, the critical mass of subscribers that they need to generate revenue on a regular basis to pay off the investments that they've made for their infrastructure, it's just not going to happen in any time frame that anybody can see in the foreseeable future.
So maybe this is just a rotten business idea to begin with.
Well, it was a hard business idea, and it was a good idea for the FCC to try to encourage competition in the space. But launching satellites into space to deliver radio is probably one of the most technically challenging ways of broadcasting you can think of.
Now they couldn't just buy up transponder space on existing satellites. I mean, that's how cable television has been distributed.
No, because the FCC actually, as part of setting up the satellite radio spectrum, released new spectrum that other services weren't already configured to use in order to actually set up the satellite radio services. So the two final winners of the auction bidding process that took place to award the two satellite radio licenses were each awarded separate blocks of spectrum on which to work. Because those pieces of spectrum aren't interoperable or aren't interchangeable with other uses, they can't just rent from existing satellites. So they had to build their own infrastructure, and that's very expensive, and they just are not in a position to recoup their costs or make a profit, much less anytime soon, which has necessitated talk of a merger. Personally, I'm really kind of torn between the idea of whether or not the XM and Sirius merger is a good or a bad idea. Because, as I said, the actual system itself exhibits the tendencies toward natural monopoly. Not everyone can lay copper wires in the ground. Not everyone can launch satellites into space. So it's kind of an obvious evolution that maybe one company would come to dominate. That being said, I am suspicious when any company comes to dominate any single market. It's really going to come down to, I think the success of the merger is really going to come down to what Sirius and XM are willing to give up as far as satellite spectrum use that can be repurposed for something else to serve the public interest, because it's ultimately clear that neither company can do that on their own.
Well, one of the things that happened when direct broadcast satellite television went into operation is that a certain number of channels were set aside for public service programming.
Right.
So if you have Dish Network, for instance, you can watch Free Speech TV. There is Colors TV, which is sort of oriented towards minorities. All very good channels, and they get carried for free, provided they can send a signal. And perhaps that's something that could be instituted for satellite radio, because it doesn't currently exist.
Right, and at the same time, one of the things that has to be reevaluated, especially in the context of public access to the satellite radio spectrum, is whether or not you need to set up some sort of tier of free service, because right now satellite radio is exclusively subscriber based. So if you give people public access to a subscriber based system, but then make people pay to actually receive it, are you doing something that is ultimately in the public interest? Yes, I would argue, because it's very similar to what we see with cable access channels, for example. But that is
to provide that sort of entry level.
But there is no regulation on the books right now that requires satellite audio services to provide for public interest access like there was for DTV.
Right. I guess in with this sort of situation, I'm always, there's this part of me, the sort of the philosophical purist who says, well, you know, it's another case of we want the free market when we want the free market. It's perfectly fine for people to lose their jobs, you know, based upon the market's whims, but not okay for companies to go out of business because their business model was just bad.
Right. Yes, that's true. And at the same time, though, that's pretty much what we're looking at is going to happen with the XM and Sirius market competition situation. At one point or another, one company is going to get to such a stage of debt that no one is going to want to offer them any more bonds to basically, you know, keep their operations going. They're going to be downgraded to junk status, and then they're ripe for takeover or bankruptcy.
You know, what's interesting,
and I think that's going to happen regardless of whether or not, you know, if a merger goes through, that may stave off the inevitable. But if a merger doesn't happen, I think ultimately that's what's going to happen anyway. One company is going to come to exist simply because having two companies in such a marketplace with such an infrastructure that's so expensive to build and maintain is just not sustainable.
With much lower subscription fees than satellite television.
And that's the other problem that Sirius and XM are having, is that while they have a lot of listeners, not a lot of those listeners are paying listeners quite yet. I don't know what the exact percentages are, but a lot of people get their introduction to Sirius or XM through things like buying a new car, where there is a Sirius or XM satellite radio built in. And as part of the purchase of the car, you get a free year's worth of Sirius or XM satellite service. I don't know what the statistics are on what the churn rate is, on how many of those people actually continue to be subscribers, because the service is still pretty new and the availability of it receiver-wise as standard features in cars is still really new. So there's a whole element of the Sirius audience that isn't paying anything for the service, or an XM audience that isn't paying anything for the service yet. Plus, there are also ways that XM and Sirius feed other content distributors, like, for example, Dish Network. You have a Dish Network.
I have a Dish Network, so I get the Sirius radio channels.
So you get
channels.
Sirius. Now, you're paying Dish Network. You're not paying Sirius directly their full $10 a month fee. Now, I'm sure Dish Network is probably paying a cut of what you're paying to them, to Sirius, but Sirius is not getting a full ride out of you. And so while they can count you as a listener or a potential listener, they can't count you as a subscriber, and that's something that doesn't make money for them.
Well, right. And we had actually a rental car last weekend, and it had XM radio as part of the deal. I think this is where they're working. I also took I was on a plane that had XM radio. So there are some ways which they're making you know, starting to make it work, although I wonder if the XM radio on the plane works off the satellite infrastructure. I guess it could.
Yeah, and the other thing is that both services are deploying parts of the spectrum for non-radio purposes. Like, for example, XM actually distributes a traffic information system, both for road traffic, so like you can dial up through your GPS network where the bottleneck is on your local highway, but also for aviation purposes. They actually distribute like aviation meteorological information and flight plan data information through a service that they've contracted for use as part of their spectrum. So they are developing other revenue models, some of which have nothing to do with satellite radio itself.
Right. And so in this particular case, unlike a lot of other mergers, the scrutiny at the FCC is a little bit higher because of the fact that regulations actually have to change.
Right. The law says two must exist.
And so that has to change. And Kevin Martin, the chair, so far in public comments, has himself been not expressed a lot of support for the merger.
Yeah, he's kind of one of these strict constructionists. Like, yes. he said, you know, I went and looked up the rules, and the rules say there can't be just one company. So I'm predisposed to say no to this idea, and that's pretty much what he said. But that hasn't stopped XM and Sirius from mounting an extremely huge lobbying campaign, both in Congress and at the FCC and in the public, featuring full page advertisements in both the popular press and trade press, just all kinds of stuff, touting the benefits of what a merger could result in. And one of the big things that they've been using as a way to bludgeon this idea that the merger is good through everybody's heads is the interoperability issue, that like XM and Sirius customers will benefit because they'll get access to both XM and Sirius's.
Right, because current radios, you buy an XM radio or you buy
XM
Sirius radio.
You get Sirius, but you can't get both.
Right, right.
And the NAB,
the National Association of
Broadcasters, is obviously opposed to the idea of an XM and Sirius merger.
And they've always been hostile to satellite radio.
Yes, they've always been hostile to satellite radio, and they are very vehemently opposed to the XM and Sirius merger. And they filed a lot of documentation with the FCC arguing against the notion of a merger. And one of their latest filings, which actually happened on June 27th, was a report done by a consulting engineer hired by the NAB specifically to write a report on how it's impossible for XM and Sirius satellite networks to actually work together. This is a complete technical obfuscation of the issue at hand, much like we saw in the issue of low-power FM radio, where the notion of interference was construed to be something completely disastrous, and volumes of technical information was written to, quote-unquote, demonstrate that interference was inevitable, when in fact, scientific reality said it wasn't. The same thing is happening with the NAB's treatment of the XM and Sirius merger. This latest document that they filed says that XM and Sirius are fundamentally incompatible because their infrastructures are completely different. First of all, the satellites each company uses use different orbital paths, so therefore they can't provide complete full coverage of the United States at any one given time. Secondly, they use different chunks of the spectrum. And thirdly, the way they encode and decode the information that they broadcast digitally are incompatible, and it's impossible to combine the two systems together without a major significant disruption to the listening environment more generally, which would include rolling out entirely new receivers and all this stuff. Therefore, if you let them merge, ultimately the whole thing's going to collapse. No one will get satellite radio, so don't let it happen.
Well, they said AM/FM radios couldn't exist either.
Yes. Now, this is belied by two fundamental facts. The first is that Sirius and XM subscribers don't receive their programming via satellite for the most part. I mean, we talk about it as satellite radio, but the satellites are simply only mirrors or reflectors that actually transmit to ground-based terrestrial repeater stations, aka gear bolted onto a rented space on a cell phone tower somewhere that actually rebroadcasts the signal, which you in your car or in your home actually pick up. So while it's satellite radio, the signal you're getting is going from ground to space to ground and then to you. So it doesn't matter where the satellites are, so long as just one of them, and XM satellites are in geostationary orbit over the United States, so long as one of them can see the U.S., one of them can feed the repeater networks, and everybody will be served. So that debunks the NAB's argument on that front. The second one is the idea of interoperable XM Sirius satellite radio receivers. Now, this is a significant issue. What happens if the merger goes through? How does someone with a Sirius radio receive XM signals when the radio was never theoretically built to do that? Well, the first thing is that interoperable receivers may already exist. Mel Karmazin, the CEO of Sirius, testified before the House Judiciary Antitrust Task Forces Committee earlier this year that XM and Sirius have already developed an interoperable receiver. They have a prototype. They have the mass production strategy ready to do it. They just haven't rolled it out yet because there has been no market incentive to do so. In that context, XM and Sirius are essentially holding interoperability hostage as a condition of approving the merger. But on the second side, some have already suggested that existing XM and Sirius radio receivers could be made interoperable by nothing more than a firmware update.
Because they're essentially just little computers.
Correct.
At this stage.
Thus, all they would need to do is basically send down a little data packet from the XM and Sirius satellite radio systems to all the existing radios saying, hey, start processing this band of frequencies now and do it in such a manner, and suddenly everybody has interoperable receivers already.
Because it's all operating in the same set of spectrum.
Right.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's a really, there's technical issues involved with the idea of merging the two systems, and they will be somewhat difficult to overcome, but it's not a mega disaster as the NAB has painted it out to be.
And you are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmanel. I'm your host. And today I'm talking with John Anderson of DIYmedia.net. He's been keeping tabs on the proposed Sirius XM satellite radio merger, delving deep into the documents they've been filing with all sorts of government authorities and watching their testimony and sniffing around for the BS. You can go to his website at DIYmedia.net. And the Media Geek website is MediaGeek.net. Send me comments, Paul, at MediaGeek.net. And the radio show can be downloaded at radio.mediageek.net. And one of the things that we talked about the last time you were on the program is the fact that what came out of some of the initial filings about this merger is that these companies have been running unlicensed transmitters. They essentially were pirates, and we're now going to settle the score on that with the Federal Communications Commission.
Yeah, I mean, this is a scope of violations that is unprecedented in broadcast history. Essentially, XM and Sirius Radio were running networks, hundreds of kilowatt-sized pirate radio terrestrial repeater stations for their satellite signals. Some of them the FCC knew about, but they were running them at four times the power than they were allowed. Some of them the FCC had no idea existed. According to one of the companies, the pirate stations alone served something like 40% of their listener base.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
This was something that was actually incredibly widespread and willful and repeated and pirate in the truest senses of the word. Now, there's been ongoing negotiations between the FCC and XM and Sirius on, okay, they've been caught. They obviously have to pay some sort of penalty. What will that be? There's been no movement. So the National Association of Broadcasters earlier this week filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the FCC for details on how it is handling the investigation into this pirate repeater network scandal. There's also another side of this scandal. XM and Sirius were also creating little mini mobile pirate radio stations by creating, designing, and producing and marketing satellite radio transceivers for cars that essentially rebroadcast the XM or Sirius signal on the local FM, on a local FM frequency, which then could be picked up by your existing stereo. And these units were overpowered, which essentially turned drivers into little mini mobile pump up the volume.
Right. I remember hearing the people were complaining that they would be listening to, because a lot of these mostly broadcast on the left end of the dial. People would listen to NPR and drive, and someone would drive by listening to Howard Stern.
And
on
suddenly
Sirius.
Howard Stern would be overblowing the
and
you know,
of course,
all
this
things
is, this
considered.
Is the satellite radio. Howard Stern who's allowed to use four letter words.
Yeah. And so, you know, XM and Sirius have demonstrated piracy on both ends of the chain, on the transmission end of the chain and the reception end of the chain, which is completely unprecedented in U.S. broadcast history. And the FCC has been looking into all these matters, and we have no idea where the investigation is at. So the NAB's filed a Freedom of Information Act request. They claim, this is NAB's words, that this unlawful behavior was condoned at the executive and senior level of the company. So they're basically saying that these were not something that some middle range guy said we can just bend the rules and get away with. This was actually part of XM and Sirius's business plan, was to break the rules in such an egregious way to make the service functional.
If you use,
that says something about the ultimate functionality of satellite radio.
Exactly. And on both ends, right? Because even with the little in-car transmitters, it's difficult to design one of those little transmitters that works well inside a car that also plays nice with the Part 15 rules for unlicensed operation.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. The FCC hasn't responded to the NAB's Freedom of Information Act request. And this is one case where the bad guys are doing something good. And I would love to see the fruits that come out of this potential request. But I'm also disappointed at the same time that this is being brought up kind of as a sideshow to the merger issue, because I think it's such an important issue in on its own rights and own merits that it should be judged like that, not completely just within the context of whether or not these companies should be allowed to get together.
Now, I haven't really been keeping up in the last few weeks. Not much has happened, really. But what is the sort of the opinion in the world of consumer groups and you know, the media democracy organizations on this? I know that public knowledge, is that right?
Public knowledge, yeah.
Yeah, public knowledge that they were had actually blogged, or Gigi Sohn had blogged a bit. She's the director. That she wasn't against this merger for a lot of reasons that you stated, because she's more of an economist, really, in her outlook, and seeing that it seemed like it might actually be in the public interest because it would keep the service alive. But she believed that some of the requirements should be that there be public service channels set aside. Actual public service should be made a part of this service.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of cases, consumer groups or the public interest community, if you want to call them that, haven't really formulated a standardized position on the merger yet. Most are opposed to it in principle for the reasons that I said. Right. No one likes the idea of one company devoting a single market. But as you mentioned with Gigi's post and others, there has been ideas that if this merger is going to go through, if it is potentially inevitable because of the marketplace forces at work, then it's incumbent upon the FCC to figure out a way to at least bring some sort of public interest requirement. The only other person to suggest that I know of was Gene Kimmelman, Vice President of the Consumers Union, director of their lobbying arm, who testified at the same hearing as Mel Karmazin. And he explicitly raised the idea of, if these two companies merge, do they need all of that satellite spectrum? And if so, or if not, then can some of that be repurposed for some other use? And the idea at that point was brushed off very quickly,
yeah, I'm sure,
by the discussion. But it is on the table, and it is something that's in play. So it's something that's. But there's all these things happening right now with net neutrality, media ownership. You know, this is just one more issue that a very still very small and very specifically. That expert public interest agencies are working on that kind of overlap their fields, so they haven't really developed a coalition point of view on this yet.
I mean, the idea of having nationwide public service channels is very enticing. One thing that Free Speech TV has been able to make of their access to satellite is to feed programming to public access television stations in a very efficient manner.
Right.
And while in a lot of ways, internet distribution has taken over from satellite distribution for a lot of community stations, especially, I think there's still a lot of gold to be mined in the ability to distribute, you know, nationwide, non-commercial, public interest audio channels, both to radio stations and just simply to people's individual receivers.
Yeah, that's a difficult one to consider, because one of the benefits of satellite radio as it exists right now is that it is pretty much exempt from all FCC content regulations.
Right.
So if you use that method, if you use satellite radio as a method to distribute programming to terrestrial radio stations, you're going to sacrifice some of the flexibility,
but you could have multiple channels. True,
you could have multiple channels. So there's that could be a potential use for it. The question really ultimately is anybody going to give anything up out of this deal on the side of XM and Sirius, and will it involve spectrum? And those are things that, as far as I can tell, no one is really talking about with any level of seriousness in this idea right now. People are still processing, getting their heads around the idea that one company may exist in the satellite radio space, and that's where everything's kind of stuck right now.
Well, and depending on where the FCC goes, it may take an act of Congress.
right,
to enable this.
And again, the market, you know, again, and that just can sound too much like a libertarian because I'm not. The market may make a lot of decisions for us. I mean, since the XM and Sirius proposed merger was announced, both companies' stocks have plunged more than 20%.
That's an odd thing to happen. Usually a merger
would raise. No.
Raises the stakes.
You know, so their stocks have actually lost value since they've announced this merger, and since the regulatory situation is in such limbo, investors are going, do we keep pumping money into this or not?
Well, it was the first sort of crack in the facade, an admittance of sort that things are not quite so good and that the model really isn't working out like they predicted
it
would.
Yeah, it's a weird, wacky space, and I don't know what's going to happen, but it's interesting to watch from the baseball statistician's perspective that I have, where I just look into the documents and see what they mean. But it's fun, and it's going to be something that's going to play itself out over the course of probably a year or more still. So
right.
We'll see.
And on a quick note, I actually wanted to bring forward is I read that NPR and the Corporation Republic Broadcasting announced that they are closing in on a deal with Sound Exchange, which is essentially the recording industry, with regard to the revised royalty rates for internet radio broadcasting. Now, they cut their own deal years ago when the royalties were first applied to internet broadcasting. They have not said what the deal is. They said they're still working on good faith negotiations. They're quite certain, though, they have 2007 taken care of. They're working on going back to 2006. And we'll see how it goes. Ostensibly, negotiations are going on between Sound Exchange and other larger and smaller web broadcasters, though not much has been heard about that. The rules, the rates, I believe, went into effect this week.
Yeah,
the
Monday,
revised rates went
much.
Into effect on July 16th, and which is why the CBB and NPR both released out to their affiliates, don't worry, we think we have you covered. And in any event, because we're in good faith negotiations, we're assured that Sound Exchange isn't going to come after you at the moment to collect royalties.
Two quick things on that front. Hopefully Congress will get off its duff and pass the Internet Radio Equality Act, which will make a lot of this a moot point because it will impose an equitable rate structure.
Yes.
And secondly, we have to keep in mind that the idea of paying webcasting royalty rates to this point is still completely voluntary. There is no extreme legal mandate in which a streamer has to pay. Sound Exchange has no mechanism set up by which to meter and account for and collect royalty rates from every streamer. They can only threaten litigation to actually come after you.
Right.
So
it's still like speeding.
It's still a game of playing the odds and playing the risks. And this is all fine and good, and it can be very damaging, especially for those that are trying to make a living off of internet radio. But streaming itself, it ain't going anywhere.
That's what I think. No, it is. It's like pirate radio. It's like smoking pot. It's like speeding.
Yep.
There are risks you can take. And they're going to pick off the big ones. They're going to pick off the ones that make the news, and they're going to
make some examples,
just like file sharing as a similar example. But nevertheless, for larger and for community stations and for larger nonprofit stations, it's good to keep an eye on that. Since a lot of times getting grants and other types of monies require also sort of proving that you're staying on the legal side of things.
Yes.
And when you're already a licensed station.
Yes.
If you're just a hit-and-run streamer on the internet, go for it.
True.
John, thank you once again.
Thanks
covered a lot of territory
this fun.
Half an hour. And you've got a few more truthful translations, audio collages set up there.
Almost 500 now. Almost 488 500. Or 89 now. It's crazy.
All right. So you can go there to hear politicians manipulated so that they astonishingly speak the truth at DIYmedia.net. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho. KQRP in Salida, California. KRBS in Oroville, California. WSLR in Sarasota, Florida. WTND, Macomb, Illinois. WRFA in Jamestown, New York. CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia. WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia. KWMD, Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska. WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont. And Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.